come on in. We have chumashim seats, other chumashim. We have enough chumashim for everybody. Some extra source sheets, please come on in. Okay. We began last week very exciting and very fascinating and very intriguing. The study, as we are presented in the first parak here, there are more chairs up here also, in the first parak of Bereishis, of the creation of Adam, the creation of man, mankind. As we're all familiar, we'll get to obviously in a few weeks, Perek Beis has a miniature summary of creation, and then of course it recreates or has a second story of the creation of Adam, and this is of course is very famous. It's perhaps the single most forceful and well-known attack of the Bible critics on traditional religious belief of the divinity of the Torah, of the Bible. After all, there seems to be two repetitive creation stories, certainly the creation of man. And as the theory in the biblical criticism school went, it was because there must have been multiple authors. Obviously, we'll reject that explanation, but what they point out, the apparent problem, is correct. And the fact is that there are many differences. It's not the same exact story. This is perhaps not only the problem, but perhaps therein lies the solution. Is that it's not the same exact story, that there are significant differences between the creation of Adam and Perek Aleph and the creation of Adam and Chava in the second parak. We'll have to get to that. But we started last week, we really divided up into two, since I didn't want to forget Nebuch, the poor animals. The poor animals were also created on the sixth day. They're not as celebrated as Adam, but they were created, and we spent a little bit of time discussing the creation of animals. And then when we focused on the creation of Adam, for last week, that second half of that year, we focused on the phrase, the very famous phrase, where God says, Na'asa Adam v'tzalmeinu. We should make man in our image. The plural is very confusing. Speak of biblical critics. Speak of heresy. How many gods are there? Who's God talking to? Who's the partner in the creation of man? So this is something that has been fascinating. Mefarshim. From the beginning of classical commentaries, Rashi quoted the Medrash with the famous ethical lesson that God was consulting with the angels, not because he had to, but because it's just a nice thing to do. If you're the big shot and you have some little shots working for you, of course you could lord your authority over them, but it's not diplomatic. And therefore God showed what we would call derech eretz, as the Medrash says, and anava, humility, by consulting, so to speak, with the angels. And the fact is, even though that did open up the possibility for misunderstanding and perhaps theological mistake and heresy, nevertheless, as the Beis Halevi is reputed to say, this Rashi teaches us a very significant lesson, really a timeless lesson, of how important midos tovos are. And in fact, in the Beis Halevi's formulation, you see from this that midos tovos are more important than deos tovos. Because if given the choice, we chose to focus on giving good midos, proper etiquette, and menschlichkeit, even at the risk of someone having the wrong theology, the wrong hashkafa. Of course, we don't want them to have the wrong theology. But the point is that the easier, safer, more conservative way would have been to write it differently. And then you would have had theological purity. You wouldn't have had to take any risk on the philosophical or the hashkafic realm. But you would have, at the cost of not teaching us this ethical Musar lesson. And yet, the Torah here, right in the beginning, teaches us a very important lesson. That was one answer that's mentioned. We saw that there were other answers. For example, it was suggested that perhaps it's the royal we, which is in fact what some of the Mefarshim say. Na'asa is in the plural, because not that God's talking to anybody, but rather it shows the significance of Adam, of mankind. It's referred to in that third person, that prerogative that shows how significant man is. Na'asa, let us, in a sense, again, of dramatizing Adam's significance. We ended this year by seeing two very beautiful ideas. One classical, one Hasidic. The classical one being from the Ramban. The Ramban saying that who is going to make Adam? There is going to be a partnership. God and the earth. Just like everything else that had been created, especially in the Ramban's view, but even without the Ramban's view, just from the simple reading of the Psukim, in the previous days we had seen that the fish came out of the water. We saw there was a debate we saw a few weeks ago, for those who are here may remember, what were the birds created out of? Were the birds created out of the earth, or were the birds created out of the water? But certainly the fish was created out of the water, and in day six, Yom HaShishi, the animals were created out of the earth. So says the Ramban, that's what Hashem was speaking to the earth. You and I will create Adam together. You'll provide his physical form, and I'll provide his spirit, his spiritual form. And finally, perhaps again, certainly not a literal or simple reading of the text, but a very beautiful Musar idea we saw from Nisbach Moshe, one of the Hasidic Rebbeim, who said Na'asa Adam was a partnership, not between God and the angels, and not between God and the earth, but between God and man himself. And that is that God says, I create you with all of potential, but you're not a complete creation unless you perfect and actualize that potential. And therefore, if God would have just said, Na'asa Adam, I will make Adam, that would imply that God, like everything else in creation, had made something in its perfect, idealized form. And that's true about the trees, and that's true about the water, and that's true about the fish, and it's true about everything, but it's not true about mankind. Mankind is unique in that it is made with a lot of potential, but it's up to the man with a capital M, man or woman, to perfect and actualize that potential. Again, certainly not the simple reading of the text, but a very beautiful midrash. What I'd like to focus on today, a little bit of a segue from the end of last week, was more, not so much pshat, not so much analyzing in the sense of this being a chumash year, but as the title of the series implies, I want to use some of the topics that we're studying in Bereishis not only to understand the text, not only to understand it as a chumash lesson, but also theologically to understand it, philosophically to understand it in the sense of being a source of important understanding of the world, important hashkafa. And tonight's shiur, I really would like to dedicate in that focus. Really not that we will be using the Chumash Mefarshim, but you will see we will have a broader range of Mefarshim than we have had in previous classes. And that is because my primary focus tonight is not to give any more insight into the narrative or to the text per se, as much as it is to use the text which introduces us to a concept and try to understand what our tradition says about that concept. This concept that I'm referring to, we'll review just these two psukim where it's mentioned. Again, we saw all these psukim last week. Comes in psukim Chav Vav and Chav Zayin. These are the famous psukim in which God introduces and, in fact, creates man here in the first chapter, the first parak of Bereishis. So what did it say? Pasuk Chav Vav, Vayomer Elokim, and God said, Na'asa Adam b'tzalmenu, let us make man in our image, kid musenu, in our likeness. Yirdu Bidgas Hayam, and he will then have rule or dominion over the fish in the sea, Uba of Hashamayim, the birds in the sky, Uba Hema, Baba Hema, and all the animals, Uba Chol Haaretz, all the land, Chol Haremes, Haromis, anything that's creepy crawling on the earth as well. Chav Zayin, so now in fact it happens, Yivra Elokim Esa Adam, Bitsalmo, God creates man in his image, Bitsalm Elokim Bara Oso, in the image of God he is created. Zachar unakeva bara osam. Yes, of course. Well, we mentioned that last week. We mentioned that some of the Farshim say that even though the opening pasuk, which speaks in the plural, has a window, is a pesach for a heretical belief, we said that in the next pasuk, the Mefarshim pointed out that the Torah goes out of its way in the next pasuk to close the window very quickly. Right? The window is only open temporarily. The window is open for one pasuk. But if you're really honest and you keep on reading, then right away it's in the singular. Which, even if you take the Rashi's midrashic view, again, it works beautifully. God consults, as it were, with the angels. But the bottom line is, that's in the plural. But who actually does the creation in Pasuk Chav Zayin? The singular, just God. Now, as I've mentioned last week, and again, we'll have to get to this, if not next week, then the week after, the end of this Pasuk Chav Zayin really is, of course, very challenging. And again, if you would translate this literally, it doesn't make any sense on its face. You cannot, this Pasuk Chav Zayin, at least the end, is really a non sequitur. God creates in his image a singular being, Oso, which is, of course, a masculine form. Zachar unakeva, male and female, bara osam. So how many people were created now? One, two? How did that exactly happen? You're left completely grasping in Perek Aleph. And in fact, perhaps we'll wait till we get to Perek Beis to discuss the relationship between Adam and Chava, their creations, respectively, and perhaps, if we're so inclined, what this can or may teach us in general about men and women, their similarities, and their differences.
Just one more point.
Yes.
It would seem, based on the shot, that the words that Telem and Elokim borrow, so would seem to be redundant. Because if we say Vajro came out on the Salmo...
So I think, I don't know if it's so much redundant, but I think what you, the point, which is well taken, is that I would use, not to be too over the top about it, the Pasuk is lyrical. It's almost poetic. There's a rhythm if you read this Pasuk. And again, it's dramatizing the event. And there's no question that just from the kind of the cadence... We need Ethan to lane it, perhaps, for us, and we'd get a real beautiful view of it. But there's something... this is a different pasuk. There's no question. You're correct to note. This is a different pasuk. It's like a way of almost letting you know, even if you were dense, now maybe we're going to knock on your head, let you know, something new is happening. Something new is happening. This isn't just the next step in creation. Now, again, there's many stronger, more concrete evidence for that. But I would suggest, take it or leave it, that even the rhythm, or the cadence of the pasuk itself almost is like, da-da-da-da. You know, the star has now entered the stage. But you're right, it is a different pasuk, and if one were just looking for an economy of words, it could have been written differently. That's correct. I think the Torah, though, is dramatizing the event. Yes, Seymour. You think about this during the week? Don't apologize, on the contrary.
Except by human beings. Why doesn't the Torah make a distinction by mammal, by all of the lower...
So perhaps, it's a good question, perhaps the answer is because it's irrelevant. The Torah tells us...
It's irrelevant. By law, if you see they came,
I'm saying, so what are we supposed to take from the fact?
I don't know.
Right, so the fact that we're not told, the fact that there are, female cows and male cows and female giraffes and male giraffes, apparently that's not necessary, at least for us to understand what we're supposed to know. Oh, good, good. So I think that goes, that's a piece, it's only a piece, but it's a piece to the puzzle, which, even if we haven't yet completed the puzzle, it's like you have the box where you already know what the puzzle is going to look like ahead of time. We know, it's clear, I don't think it's just a matter of faith, I think we all have a sense of it, that the bottom line is, what's the piece of the puzzle? The piece of the puzzle is that Adam is the crown of creation. So there are many, many little pieces that make up that larger puzzle. Much evidence for that. Subtle and concrete. But one of the ones, which I think is maybe a subtle one, but a correct one, is this point as well. There's something that's unique that we need to understand about Adam here in the larger global sense, Adam and Chava, or the way they're, neither of them get names here, they're just referred to as the Zachar, Unakeva, Bara, Osam. Yeah. Yes, 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 absolutely. Yes, yes. For all those of us with somewhat feminine characteristics, we shouldn't be insecure. And for those females who like to get out a hammer and do some work around the house, they shouldn't be insecure. Zachar nekeva bara osam. That, in a sense, there are feminine and masculine characteristics in everyone. Yes?
I don't want to sound politically correct, but maybe that's why it says nasa. To make us realize that...
Two attributes.
Two attributes of God.
Okay, good. Yeah, one more question, then we'll move on. Hey, how you doing? Oh, Adam. Right, the bara oso, but it's the bara oso zachar nekeva bara osam, which is complicating. Okay, fair enough. Good. Okay, it definitely needs explanation. Maybe that's the correct explanation. Good. The point is, you can't read it quickly, that's for sure. Right, that's for sure. Okay. Now, the question which I would really like to deal with, again, it's mentioned in both of the psukim, is a phrase which, again, we alluded to when we read the psukim for the first time, yes, last week, and today I really want to focus on it. I don't think we'll be able to write necessarily an encyclopedia entry, but I think at least a thumbnail of what is the general overall view, what are the range of views and understandings in among our commentaries, what is the concept of mankind being created, B'Tselem Elohim, in the image of God. Now, I would think, without exaggerating, there are very few questions which are more important towards our understanding of what it means to be a human being. What does that mean? The first thing we're told about the creation of humanity is that it is B'Tselem Elohim. B'Tselmenu, Kimusenu, B'Tselem, we'll call that whole thing. In shorthand, we're going to call that Tzelem Elohim. That's the first thing we're told. That's itself significant. Plus, if you just want to translate that pretty literally, the image of God, right, that's pretty weighty stuff. What does that mean?
kind of counterbalances the Naseh, because the Naseh could be interpreted as the angels. And
well, we'll
say,
see.
It doesn't say he
Elohim, Tzelem Elohim might be understood that way as well. We'll see. But your point is going to be...
Of angels,
well, your point, but in the opposite direction, that it may include them, you'll see in some of the first portion we see. But let's just to review, again, something that may be familiar to you, but I decided just for the sake of an introduction, it's worth putting it on the sheet, which is, of course, a very famous Mishnah in Pirkei Avos. As you know, this is just as a PS, so you shouldn't be frustrated if this comes up in further studies or classes. Pirkei Avos, more than almost any other primary text, is notorious and frustrating because there are many different versions, not so much of the words, but of the demarcation. Because you may be looking in one version of Pirkei Avos, and the Mishnah you're looking for is in Chapter 3, Mishnah 14. But if you open up the next one on your shelf, it's Parak Gimel Mishnah 18. This is classic, and it's an example of our Mishnah as well. Depending on which one of the Avos on my shelf I opened, this is either Gimel Yudalit or Gimel Yud Ches or Gimel Tezlov. So if you know what you're looking for, you can at least find it. But the breakup of the Mishnayos, unfortunately, I don't know the history behind why this actually happened. Probably somebody knows. I have a friend who actually wrote a PhD at Harvard on analyzing commentaries, Mefarshim, on Pirkei Avos, a particular period. So he would be the closest thing I know to an expert on Pirkei Avos, although I'm not sure that this fell even within the scope of his study, but I should ask him, because every time I do something from Pirkei Avos, I have the same level of frustration. But depending on your version, everyone agrees this Mishnah is in the third parak, that I can tell you. No version that I've seen has this in a different parak. This is in the name of Rabbi Akiva. This is following a previous Mishnah from Rabbi Akiva. Here the Mishnah continues, Hu Haya Omer, he used to say as well, Chaviv Adam, Shenivra Batzela. And here, how would you translate Adam? Right. Which means all humanity. Right? Black and white, male and female, Jew and Gentile, everybody. All of humanity, all of mankind is somehow extra special, beloved, because we are created, we meaning humanity, Batzelem, in the image of God. Interestingly, the Mishnah continues, Chiba Yisera no daslo, and it an extra, more heightened sense of appreciation or love is that we were told this Shenivra B'Tzelem. Shenemar, as the Pasuk says later on in Parshas Noach, when it talks about Shofech Adam, the prohibition there of murder, what's so bad about murder? B'Tzelem Elohim Asa Esa Adam. Noach is told because in the image of God was man made. So it's interesting, just the Mishnah continues. The Mishnah actually has three phrases. I only included the second one, which is equally important and equally famous. Chaviv in Yisrael, and even somehow an extra special love the Jewish people get within humanity, a subcategory. Shnikru Banim Lamakom. Because we are not just Adam, but we are Banim. We are God's children. Chiv Yisera no Daslahem. Furthermore, it's even more beautiful and more appreciative because we are told this, that we were considered God's children, as it says in Devarim, Banim Atem Hashem Elokeichem. You are God's children. So two things to point out. Again, number one, the same impression that we have from reading the Pesukim in Bereishis, namely that the first thing we're told about Adam, the first thing we're told about humanity is Tzelem Elohim, Vitzalmenu, Kidmusenu. And again, we said right away, the very fact that that's the first thing we're told certainly gives us a very strong impression that this is obviously very, very important. So that instinct is confirmed by this Mishnah. Right? This is somehow something particularly unique about humanity within all creation, and in itself particularly reflects the special devotion or special love that God has, presumably for all of creation, but within that, this is the Kiddush, if God didn't love anything else and just loved us, that's one level. But if you tell me that God loved everything, and He even loves humanity more, Chaviv Adam Shenivra B'Tzelem. And why is that? What's so great? What's so special? Because unlike everything else in creation, which again is the handiwork of God, as we say in the Torah and it's in Midrashim, Hatsur Tamim Pa'alo, all of creation is beautiful and perfect because it's made by God. Nevertheless, something that's even more beautiful, more perfect, more something is humanity. Why? Again, Nivra B'Tzelem. Now, a P.S., just as a Derech Agav, to mention from this Mishnah, is a true emotional and psychological reality to this very day. And again, I think I haven't seen anyone say this, but to me it's striking as a side point from this Mishnah, is that there's two things, especially when it talks about emotions. There's an objective feeling or an objective reality. Mankind was created in the image of God, B'Tzelem Elohim, And that right away gives you a reality of chavrut. It's wonderful. It's beautiful. But what makes something chiba yisera? What makes it more beautiful? Shenodaslo, if you tell the person. Right? This is like marriage counseling 101. And it's in the Mishnah. It's in Pirkei Avos. And it's true. It's a, you just read that again. If you think about it, now reread the Mishnah. Each one of these phrases is repeated. There's three clauses. Again, I didn't include the third one. But both of them, the one about humanity, the one about the Jewish people, it's repeated. First it's Chovev Adam, and then it's Chiba Yisera. Why? What is something extra? What's additional? What's added by the second phrase? No da'aslo. When it's told to them. The fact that in Parshas Bereishis, God says, ooh, let's create man in my image, in image of God. So, okay, it's an objective truth, it's a reality now, but Adam wasn't necessarily told that he was created in God's image. When Noach is told that humanity is made in God's image, that's already Chiba Yisera. Right? So just, you know, saying it once does not work for an entire marriage. Okay, either way, good. You know, you want to make it a little less dramatic than I'm making it. The point still remains the same. Once something is communicated, it goes from Chaviv to Chiba Yisera. I think that's clear from the Mishnah. Yeah?
Just one minor point. Is there any impartial to discuss the difference in Selam and Kibbutz?
Yes. We are not going to be so focused on it, but yes, the answer is yes. The answer is yes. Okay. Let's take a look. Where do we start? It is, after all, Chumash here, so we will start with Rashi. Look at Rashi. There are four Rashis altogether, Harry. This goes to your point. Because in two different psukim, we have two. Each one has two phrases. One is Selim or Salmenu, one is Dmus, right? So look at Pasuk Chav Vav, right? The first of the two psukim that we just read, Pasuk Chav Vav. The opening two Rashis we did last week, those were the ones about Na'asa Adam. And what comes after that? What does Rashi say? Bit Salmenu, Bitfus Shelanu, in our image, or with our defus here, I think they translate it as like a mold.
Imprint
or mold. Good. Now, who's our? Good question. What's the mold? Good question. Next Rashi. There's four Rashis, and they're not consistent. Kidmusenu, in our likeness. What is the definition of dmus, God's image? Lahavin ulahaskil. It's an intellectual apprehension, the ability to understand. Ulahaskil means to acquire wisdom. Okay, now let's talk two more Rashis. That's Rashi 1 and Rashi 2. We'll try to use those demarcations. What's Rashi? We'll get back to it. We will be sure, don't worry. Not yet. Just holding you off, Harry. Rashi number 3. Look at the next pasuk. Bitzalmenu. I'm sorry, Bitzalim Elohim. Where am I? Am I in the right place? That's number 3, right? No, that's number 4. I skipped. I'm sorry. The beginning of Chav Zayin, thank you. But Yivra Elohim as Adam Etzamo, first Rashi in Pasuk Chav Zayin. Bidfus ha'asilo, in the mold, the form that was made for him. And then Rashi goes on to tell us about, was man created with an utterance, an expression, or somehow at the hand of God? That's not, I don't think, important for us.
But,
so Rashi number 1, Bernie's correct, I think. Everyone hear that? Rashi number 1 and Rashi number 3 are consistent. In both places, when Rashi explains the concept of Tselem, he says it's in somehow in our defus, in our mold. What's the next Rashi? Tselem Elohim bara oso. Everyone have that? Next Rashi. I gotta get it now. Pirish Lacha. This verse can be explained to you. Sh'oso Tselem. That image, Hamatukan lo, which is fixed or assigned for him, for mankind. Tselem diyokan yotrohu. It is the image of the semblance, or the image in the appearance of the Creator. That's very different than anything Rashi had said until now. In the fourth Rashi, Rashi was like holding back his trump card till the end. So in the last of the four Rashis, Rashi says, what does it mean when it says, Tselem Elohim bara oso? That in some way, mankind is created in the image of his Creator. Diokon Yotro, the image of his Creator. The term Diokon is a little bit of a funny term, but you may be more familiar with it from a more famous Rashi later on in Sefer Bereishis. Who remembers which Rashi uses a conjugation of the form Diokon? The one I'm thinking of. Maybe you know, you're thinking of something else. You might be right. That's what I'm thinking of, Yosef. Yeah, I'm thinking of Yosef slash Yaakov, yes. when Yosef is tempted by Potiphar's wife, so if you look in the Chumash, it just seems like Yosef is impervious to her seduction, but that's not the tradition that Chazal had. It's a Gemara Masechet Sota, which Rashi quotes on the Torah. Rashi says that when he came to work that day, he had finally ready to give in to her advances. What stopped him? He saw Demust Yukno Shelaviv. He saw the image of his father, whatever that symbolizes, but that's what finally gave him the self-control to stop himself. So that's the same term. Diukon means an image. So here Rashi says it's the image of God. That's what the Tselem Elohim Bara Oso.
A different word that with Yitzchak
is cluster upon Yitzchak. Which story is that from? Okay. That he looked just like him.
Right.
That's a different tradition, right? They were the Avram was so old. How could he really be the father of Yitzchak? So Rashi says that there were people who were making fun. Perhaps he wasn't the legitimate father. Therefore, the way it was, the physical similarities between Yitzchak and Avram were so close that it made it obvious that Avram was Yitzchak's father. But that is a different word. Okay. Now, let's focus for now on the first two Rashis, are the ones that are at least easy and consistent. Namely, the Rashi talks about this mold. What does that mean? So one of the classic commentaries that fills in the blanks when we have questions on Rashi is the Sifsei Chacham. You look at the second source on the sheet, but he shtups in a little bit. He forces his way into Rashi and gives us a very simple understanding. If it's correct, there's a different question, but at least if it's correct, very simple, straightforward understanding. Namely, what did Rashi mean? Ratzalomer, that means to say, bitfus, he adds in important words, shehechinu la'adam. Now, I assume the third person is he's sort of consistent with the theme of talking to the angels, so to speak. Namely, not that it's an actual image of God. What it means is, let's create man, in the tefus, in the mold, which we have prepared for him. But that's not necessarily what that mold could be. It could be anything. Tall, short, it's irrelevant, right? Big, high cheekbones, low cheekbones, this is a, you know, pointy chin or not a pointy chin, and these things, this is not told to us. Rashi says, the way the Sifsei Chumim reads the Rashi, it doesn't mean God's mold, it means the mold that God, and or perhaps the Hevel, the angels, prepared for him. Now, why would Sifsei Chumim need to read that in? Because there's a tension here. Now, again, the importance of this Sifsei Chumim, more than what he says, is what he reveals. That is the tension that lurks behind these psukim. Because you can't take Rashi or the psukim straightforward and say that it means in the image of God. Because there is no such thing as an image of God. As the Pasuk tells us in Beis Hanan, there's no picture, there's nothing to see. And that's why Rashi, this is, he's referring to, he's paraphrasing Rashi number 3, I think. I'm sorry, he's still praying Rashi number 1. What does he mean to say? Ratzi Lomar? That means to say, Ha'asui Lanu, that which we have done for him. We have created this mold out of which Adam will be, the Zachar Unakeva will be created, but not anything to do necessarily with looking like us. Furthermore, he says, this is what Rashi meant when he, in Rashi number 3, Kedepirsh B'samuch, Al Milas B'tzalmo, B'tfus Ha'asui Lo, in the tfus in the form that we made for him. Oh, the Perish Rashi, what about Rashi number 4? Selim Dukon Yotro, that said it's the image of God, that goes directly against everything that he has just said. There is no image of God. Hachi Perusho, this is what it means to say. But also Dukon Shenira Lehem Anivim, Kishenigla Lehem. When? Navi X or Y, whether it will be an Abraham, whether it's a Moshe Rabbeinu, whether it's a Yechezkel Navi, whether it's Miriam Haneviyah. Whoever the Navi or Naviyah is, who has an image, as a vision of God, so whatever form that they see God taking, kach bara has the Adam. In other words, if they see, like they feel like they're talking to a person or being talked to by a person, it's the image of God, it's God taking some image, which then they can feel like they've been communicated to, or communicated from, it's that image, which was the image of Adam, which was the image of the Zachar. But even that is not an actual, essential image of God. It's just that when the Navi was talking to God, so the vision took a form. But that's a way of the Navi or the Naviyah relating to God. So in order to have a point of reference, Adam, the Zachar and Nekeva that are created here, the first humans, were created in that similar likeness. But none of that has anything to do with the essential form of God, because there is no essential form of God. Yes? So it's interesting. Rashi seems to say yes, but I'm not saying. I don't think we'll say that the rest of this year.
Particularly, if you look at the, you know, God made, you know, with the earth, the other part that He put, that God put in, isn't necessarily the physical part. So there's a whole lot of, you know, the attributes of God aren't physical either.
Right. It's interesting,
so
but this
that,
is
that's the part
correct.
That's
but it's interesting, right? This is the way He puts together Rashi. So again, whether that's correct, putting together the four Rashis or not. And one thing, he didn't say four. He's only talked about three so far. He left out Rashi number two, the one of intellectual apprehension. We're going to get to that Rashi. We're holding him back. The Sisachamim doesn't quote that. But at least Rashi one, Rashi three, and Rashi four, Sisachamim tries to put together. What is more important to me than the way Sisachamim puts it together is the tension which he's clearly under. Why does he feel the need to say all this? Or if he's correct, why does he think Rashi feels the need to say all this? Because there's a tremendous weight bearing down on them. What does it mean to say the image of God? Is God corporeal? Is there such an image? When we say that you are the spitting image of your mother, we have a physical characteristic in mind. Just like Eli mentioned when he said, Yitzhak and Yaakov, there's a spitting image, a characteristic, a similarity of image. So it would be one thing if God had a physical image to say, you look just like it. You know, you have God's eyes. But the problem is, it's very simple. That's heresy. That's kfira. We don't believe in that.
So,
good. So then what is it trying to tell us, though? Oh, so that's the rest of the shir. Good. But that's not what Rashi says. But Ma'al Sukham understands Rashi. Now, one more before we get to some of the essential characteristics which it might be telling us about man. Another interesting school of thought which really deflates the significance of these psukim is mentioned by some of the Mefarshim, both on the Torah as well as one of the classical philosophical works that we have in our tradition. If you look at the Ibn Ezra, third source on your sheet, in one word, what is Betzelem Elohim? Malach. It didn't mean God or divine with a capital, super capital D. It meant one of those spiritual creatures up there with Elohim, like a Malach. Who else follows in that tradition, interestingly enough? The Rashbam. If you had to say, if I gave you a list, name me the top five Pashtanim. Right, probably you'd argue who's number one and who's number two, Ibn Ezra or Rashbam, Rashbam or Ibn Ezra. But probably no one would disagree that these are the top two. The most literal readers of the text of all of our Mefarshim, Ibn Ezra and the Rashbam. Rashbam, of course, being Rashi's grandson. What does he say in Betzalmeinu? Betzalem HaMalachim. That somehow, whatever this means, so again, what's the tension? Well, it can't be the physical image of God, because God doesn't have an image. Perhaps Malachim can have images. Nothing against that. And the PS to this is that there is a tradition in Chazal that the Kruvim, at least, are some of those high super-duper angels, that they had the face of children. There was some kind of a human face, at least to some angelic creatures. So perhaps this is related to that. But be that as it may, Ibn Ezra and Rashbam say, who was Zachar and Ukeva? What was Adam, what was Adam created in the image of? The angels. Look at the Rashbam. He continues. Let me just read the second part of the Rashbam. On Pasach of Zion, on the word of Betzalmo, what does he say? Shel Adam, hu Betzalim Elohim, namely Malachim. Again, reiterates his previous point, that man is created in the image of the angels. But don't ask, don't be bothered, he says. Imlo Parish Yitzirus HaMalachim. This is an issue which we've seen already in, I think, two previous Shurim, which is, after all, hey, in the image of angels, since when are there angels? There's no mention of angels in the state of Bereshis. Right, we saw that, in fact, there's always been a tradition that angels are created. And in fact, we saw, if you'll remember, this is going back over a month, we saw there was a machlokes in the Medrash, what day of the creation were the angels created in. But the bottom line is, the reason there can be such a machlokes is because the Torah text doesn't mention it. No, it doesn't mention in Bereshis that...
Oh, in the creation.
Yes. So that's what says the Rashbam, you know, Mr. Pashtun himself. Here I am saying that on day six, Adam is being created in the image of the angels. But where are their angels? There are no angels. Where did I know about angels from? Kilokos of Moshe Khan Lo Malachim. After all, he says, but don't, you know, get too excited. After all, lots of things that exist weren't mentioned. After all, Moshe didn't write angels. Hulo Gehenim, right? Punishment, some hell, whatever you want to, however you want to translate Gehenim, it's his own mystery. But that's not mentioned in Bereshis. Hulo Maisa Merkava, right? The famous prophecy of Yechezkel. There's lots of esoteric spiritual creations or realities which we may believe in as a matter of faith, They're not mentioned. Not everything is mentioned. What's the theory, says the Rashbam? Ela dvarim sh'anu roim ba'olam haniskarim ba'asaras ha'divros. Namely, the Torah here is telling us about things that we can see, you know, which we can apprehend with our five senses. Things which are somewhere else, even if we believe they exist, they're not there. So angels we can't apprehend, so they're not mentioned in the creation story. Mankind can be created in the image of the angels, and of course we're told about the creation of Adam, because of course that's central to the story.
Then it becomes really circular. It's just like the man looks like angels, but what do angels look like?
Man, yes, fair enough. I want to mention one more thing. These are classical Mefarshim on Chumash. One of the most central or classical traditional books of Jewish philosophy and thought in Mashrava is the Sefer HaKuzari, written by Rabbi Yehuda HaLevi. We've mentioned this in an earlier shiur. The whole, aside from being philosophically very insightful, it's a literary work of art. Because instead of just giving you a philosophy book, which would make most of you, perhaps other than me, maybe Bernie, a few others who like to study philosophy, and would everyone else go snooze, and, you know, can they take a different class? So the Sefer HaKuzari didn't write a book of philosophy. He wrote a story. He wrote a story of a king who wants to convert, and he brings representatives of the religion, and they talk. It's a literary gem just from that, and many, many people who have followed that. What's the most famous contemporary, so to speak, modern work of Jewish philosophy, which borrows the same model? Let's see, who's a real bucky in Jewish thought? I'll give you a hint. The origins, this is before there were from Jews really in America per se, but the origins, when you think about European communities, are very close to the origins of the Baltimore Jewish community. There we go! Excellent. Rav Simchon Raphael Hirsch wrote a classic work of philosophy known as 19 Letters, which is a whole book. Again, it's a book of philosophy. Rav Hirsch is battling the Haskalah and the Reform movement in Germany. And instead of just saying this is a modern Orthodox philosophy which is going to somehow captivate these secularized modern people in Germany and keep them in the fold, which would have been boring snooze, he wrote a dramatized back and forth between two people writing letters. So the same idea. Where did he get the idea from? From the Sefer HaKuzari. Excellent. So what does the Kuzari say? That was just a little bit of a background. Parts of the Kuzari are a little bit dry and philosophical, actually. And in this part of Maimer Dalet there in Sefer Kuzari is one of them where he's discussing different words and adjectives in the Torah. One of the things that he says here is, Tach bara ha'lokas adam v'tzuras malachav. He makes the point, again, for the sake of time, I won't read you the whole section that I had on the sheet, but the punchline is, he agrees with Rashbam. The punchline is he agrees with Eben Ezra. Adam was created. What does that mean, Salam Elohim? It means in the image or likeness of angels. Yes?
The concept of the parshanim.
I can't hear you.
The parshanim that say that Salam is referred to as
Allah. Yeah.
Seems to be odd with the actual shot in the book, but sign is what they're talking
about. Oh, so? But Salmo. Right. Right. So he says the his. Look at the first word of. Look at the Rashbam. But Salmo. Who's the O? Not of God. Shel Adam. And an image that's particularly apt for the mankind, which is Salmo Elokim Ayim Malachim. Salmo is in his image, in his uniquely quintessential human image, which is based on the model of...
I have with it is the fact that based on the first Rashi, we distinguish between Salmo Devus meaning Lahavino Asbio, which was...
So they don't accept that.
Okay. No, but I mean, the Salmo, are we talking... We're not a physical. We're talking about a physical. In that case, everything, the animals, the fish, everything, Hashem... That form that was that a snake or an animal, that was also Hashem's fellow.
But it wasn't.
I mean, why would...
Not that it's God.
I mean, I understand the Hashem is the mother, but we're talking about a physical dimension.
Good.
In that case,
good.
Then everything was made of
fellow. Fair enough. Good. Fair enough. Yes.
Well, we're showing them or asking questions, and they're giving their own independence for us. Chazal, we're in trouble by this?
Well, we have one of the things that which we have is the famous Gemara about the Septuagint, right? The Gemara Maseches Megillah and Daf Tes, right, where Talma Amelech throws the 70 rabbis into the room, says translate the Chumash into Greek, right? The different rooms, of course, that's the joke. So there's two people here who heard that joke yesterday, right? The joke is that it was 70 people, 70 rabbis in 70 different rooms. God made a miracle that they all came up with the same thing. Of course, the real miracle would have been if the 70 rabbis in one room, they could have come up with the same idea. But all right, all right. You know what they're doing in Europe when you make jokes about the religious figures. You got to be careful here. I don't know. Again, the fact that it might potentially be a problem, so that's what the Chazal and that Gemara are alluding to. But what's the solution to the problem, other than changing it when you translate it to Greek, is a good question. It's a good question. Now, the bottom line is, though, that all of this is a minority opinion. Most Mepharshim understand this had nothing to do with angels, that somehow it means the image of God. But the question is, what does that mean? Because we can't really mean, notwithstanding some of the things that Rashi hinted at, it can't mean a physical likeness of God, because the Chacham is right, of course, we don't believe that God has an image. So what you have instead is a number of the different Mepharshim, both classic and contemporary, who essentially say that this is a euphemism for a certain characteristic. And again, if each Mepharsh, according to their understanding, define or give you a particular characteristic, a particular adjective as being euphemistically implied by the term Tzem Elokim, obviously that goes to highlight the central significance of that particular attribute. Because if this is how humanity is going to be described as it's created, obviously Mepharsh X, Y, or Z, if they're going to tell us that what it really means is attribute X, Y, or Z, is that they're essentially saying to us that this is one of, if not the, defining unique aspect of what it means to be a human being. So the stakes are very, very high, and we'll see that there are, as I say, a number of different beautiful explanations for what that means. What is the essential? Again, if you wanted to really blow this up into a headline, what we're really asking is not just how to understand Tzem Elokim. It's another way of saying, what is the defining characteristic of it is to be a human being? So there's a number of schools of thought to that question. The first one is not so well known or attributed to Rashi, perhaps because he muddled the waters himself, but goes back to Rashi himself in his second comment. What did Rashi say in his second comment? So Chachamim got all bothered by 1, 3, and 4. But what did Rashi say in number 2? L'havin u'lahaskil. To have intellectual apprehension and to acquire knowledge. What is unique about Adam as opposed to the previous creations? What does it mean to have Tzelem Elokim, a unique superiority of human beings over all other creations? Our ability of intellectual apprehension. So it's already in Rashi. But who is this most famously attributed to? It's most famously attributed to the Rambam. Maimonides. The Rambam, before we get to the Rambam, I got ahead of myself. I put this on the sheet. It was on last week's sheet, but we ran through this outside. I almost did it again now. Just to point out, again, I think the point was made, I don't know if it was by Seymour or somebody else, Dr. Rose, that you see from this Rashi, the one that the Chachamim put it together, and this whole idea of Malachim, was that somehow it was a physical characteristic. Physical characteristic, which is in the image of these angels, so to speak. So as I just pointed out to you, that is a really unique way of looking at this. Most don't see this as a physical characteristic. They see it as some kind of euphemism for some specific characteristic, spiritual characteristic. So who's the one who already told us that that's what Tzelem Elokim means? We saw that in the Ramban, which I paraphrased at the beginning of this week's shiur, which was on last week's sheet, and it's on this week's sheet again. I just summarized that one line where he says, what does that mean when God had said, Na'asa we? We meaning me, God, and you, the earth. We'll each give our two components. What would the earth contribute? After all, humanity will be similar to Earth in one sense, but matchones gufo in its physical appearance, la'aretz asher lukach memenu. Since man is created from the Earth, as we'll see in Parak Meis, Adam is taken from the Adama, and therefore physically appearance will cut like the Earth. Right, correct. But there is a spiritual elevated characteristic of man and kind, namely the yidmeh beruach le'elyonim. But if man's spirit will be comparable and look like, or be from the higher creatures. Ain't a goof below the most. It doesn't have a body below tumos, and that can't die. Man's body can die, but again, this is poets have been singing about this, but they didn't get it before the Ramban. That man's spirit will live on. The ruach below tumos. The spirit will never die. Okay. Now, what is the spirit we're talking about? The Ramban doesn't tell us. The Ramban just says there's a spiritual characteristic of man. So one explanation in Rashi, and it's more famously known as the opinion of the Rambam holds, it's man's intellectual capabilities. So the Rambam talks about this in a number of places. Perhaps the two most well-known ones are both the Rambam and his Mishnah Torah and Hilchos Yesodei Torah, and then perhaps even more famously, although a little bit more difficult, is the Rambam and his comments in Mora Nevuchim. If you look at the Rambam as the second to the source to the bottom of the page, you see that he says Yesodia Torah. What does that mean? This tzura, this form that God, image that God gave to all creatures. V'hadas hayesera, this extra ability of intellectual ability, hametsuya benafsho shel adam, which is contained in the soul of every man. Hi tzuras haadam hashalem bedato. This is the essence, the highest essence of mankind. V'al tzura zu ne'amar b'torah. It's about this ability, this essence, this image, this form of man that it says in the Torah, Na'as Adam Bitzalmenu Kidmusenu Klomer, that means to say, Shefilo Tsura Hayodas Umaseges Hadeos, that part of humanity that can learn and can apprehend Hadeos Ein Lehem Golem Kamo Amalachim, that can apprehend things that aren't just physical. Anyone, even an animal, a dog, can bump into a table and know there's a table here. The dog now knows there's a table. That's not the type of knowledge we're talking about. It's the ability to apprehend abstract concepts, spiritual concepts, like a malach or something like that. Just like a malach can apprehend spiritual characteristics, the fact that mankind has the ability to apprehend and to understand abstractions, philosophies, spirituality, that intellectual capability, says the Rambam, that is the Tzelem Elokim that is being referred to. The truth is, this is a summary of his more famous but longer comment on this. The Rambam has, of course, his famous philosophical work, The Guide to the Perplexed, the Mor Nevuchim. The opening salvo, if you open up Mor Nevuchim, chapter 1, page 1, the opening salvo, the opening discussion of the Rambam Mor Nevuchim is, what is Tzelemim and what is Gushmi? This is the Rambam's first topic. It's that central, it's that important, and it's that confusing. We're Nevuch, we're confused, we're perplexed. What does it mean to have the image of God? What does it mean to have the form of God? Tzelem, the most, what do these words mean? So look at the Rambam. He begins, this is the opening words of Mor Nevuchim. If you didn't finish it, at least today we started it. Talmud Nemus, listen to this. He says, Kvar yashvu b'nei Adam. Many people in history have sat and they have thought, Ki tzelem b'loshon ha'ivri mora al tavnes ha'davar b'taro. They have thought that the Hebrew word tzelem refers to some physical likeness or form. The Hebeum, and that thought, that understanding has brought them lidei hakshama muchletes, to look at God as hakshama is from gashmius. So see God in physical, corporeal form. Because God says, let's make man in my image. And they thought that God's physical likeness is like the image of man. His physical likeness. So that is a mistake, says the Rambam. They don't realize if you want to know what does it mean, the physical likeness, that's not how you, in Hebrew language, says the Rambam, that's not tselem and that's not the mus. That's a different Hebrew word called toar. So what does the word tselem mean? He, amitato, machmas heyoto, osa hamatsui. Now that is philosophical tongue twister. It is the essence of itself and the truth of its essence of itself. You'll spend the whole year thinking about what that phrase means, you won't know. So let's continue reading. Asher oso ha'inyan ba'adam hu, what is this essence, this true quintessential human characteristic? Hu asher bo tiyeh ha'hasaga enoshit, the man's ability to intellectualize, to comprehend. U'beglal ha'hasaga ha'sichlis, because of mankind's intellectual abilities, hazu ne'amar b'tselem elokim bara oso. Again, identifying, it's like an equal sign, it's a synonym. What does image of God mean? Hasaga hasichlis, the ability to intellectually apprehend things. And he repeats this again, and then he says at the end, Ukasher yiched ha'adam b'inyan mufla ma'od. If you want to know what is the most exalted thing, the most uniquely exalted thing about humanity, Shavo, what is it? Ashein b'shum davar b'chol ha'metzius, that no other creature in God's creation has. Itachas gilgal ha'erech, underneath, you know, the whole creation, everything underneath the moon, vi hasaga hasichlis. It's man's intellectual capability. Like Rashi hints at in two words, Rambam spends quite a lot of time saying it. If you want to know what does it mean to be in Tzelem Elokim, Trepiogo says, Chav Adam Shnibur V'Tzelem, all humanity has something unique. Again, Harry, this is for you, because this makes it very different than all of other creation. As opposed to the first part of Rashi, which I think you correctly pointed out, then what would be the difference? Everything's made in its form. So the advantage of this comment of Rashi and what the Rambam elaborates on is that there's something very unique that humanity has, its intellectual capabilities.
But according to the Rambam, then what is the moose?
He discusses that. He ties them together. If you look at the Mor Nevuchim, again, for the purpose of the Shira, he discusses it. It's also in Paragraph. It's all in the beginning of Mor Nevuchim. But the bottom line is, it's the same thing. The upshot, Essentially, what is important for us is essentially the same thing.
Telem and the Mufti.
Yes. Yeah, whatever the differences are, what's important for us is that they're not saying anything radically different. I think correct. I think that's correct. I think so. I think so. That we would have a basis to assume that. Correct. A second approach, which I only found out, actually has an earlier source right before I came. To me, I should have realized this and put it on the sheet. I think the earlier source goes back, if not at the Labrate, which is why I missed it the first time, is Asforno, Ravaggio Asforno, the famous Italian Rishon. But, again, apparently it wasn't quoted by the Meshech Chachma, but more recently, the Meshech Chachma, the famous Rav Meir Simcha of Zvinsk, we've quoted him before here in this context, one of the classics in the Farshim HaChumash. Again, I think I told you the brief biographical story, but I'll mention it once again. He wrote, as a young man, he was the Rav of Tvinsk. He was a Litvisha non-Hasidic rabbi. At the same time, was the famous Rogachover, Rav Yosef Rosen, who was a Hasidic rabbi in Tvinsk. Rav Meir Simcha wrote, what do rabbis spend most of their time doing? They got to give drushes, they have to speak in Chumash, right? So he wrote the Mesher Chachma right away. He wanted to publish it. So who do young rabbis look to for advice? Their fathers. His father said, don't publish it. Because if you'll publish the Meshech Chachma, everyone will say, no, he knows a little Chumash. But is he a real Talmud Chacham? They'll mark you, you'll be characterized as just somebody who knows Chumash. So what was he working on at the time anyway? His famous Lomdusha Halachic commentary, which was a commentary on the Rambam, which is where he gets his more well-known acronym known as the Or Sameach. Hence the Yeshiva Or Sameach. The Or Sameach. So he says, first publish Or Sameach, then the Welt will know, it's not Talmud Chacham. Then the Tuvah Talmud Chacham also knew Chumash, the publisher of Meshech Chachma. So this was written first, but published second. Okay. Now you know. So what does he say in this great Meshech Chachma? What does it mean? On our pasuk, he says, "Atzelim ha'eloki hu ha'bechira ha'chavshus." What is the unique, the quintessential human characteristic which can be described as so exalted that it can even be called the image of God? What does humanity have that no other creature has? The ability of free choice. Bli teva machriach. In other words, there's no even part of, not only is there no external force, even a person's nature can't force them to do something that they don't ultimately acquiesce to. Now with this, the Meshech Chachma was a man well ahead of his times. I don't want to digress for more than 20 seconds, but just so you should know, if you're not yet familiar, one of the major issues today, literally today, is the various schools, not only of psychology, which he was probably already alluding to, but in our day and age, of genetics. This is a major issue. I've been at conferences where philosophical papers have already been struggling with this, that if genetics make you predisposed, you know, make it inevitable you can have X, Y, and Z disease, so how can you say some of them relate to behavior, some of them don't? But if they map you out on the gene pool and it says that you're going to do X, Y, or Z, so then doesn't that potentially conflict with Bechira Chavshus? So philosophers and Rabbanim, people are ready, who know, but they're already tumbling. They're already tumbling. The Human Genome Project, I'm telling you, there's all...
This goes back to the Mordis, as if you're born under the...
A little bit, yes. Chazal also had premonitions. Yeah, Chazal also had premonitions. And yet, the bottom line is, as the Meshech Chachma says so beautifully, even your own nature cannot force you to do something. It can make you, again, I'm reading a little bit into this, but it sounds like you would add, it can make you lean towards it. It can push you almost all the way there, but not 100 degrees. 100, ultimately, even your own teva, even your own nature, cannot force you to do something. Rock, over that, apparently, right? Rock may rotzon v'seichel chavshi, right? The only thing that can ultimately force you to do something is if you make a free choice to do this. Rock zos anu yodim, shalaha v'chira ha'chavshis, humi atzimsam ha'lokas. What he then gets into now, which for the sake of time I'm going to abbreviate, is he then gets into now maybe the most famous philosophical conundrum, which is how can people have free choice to do anything if we also believe that God knows everything already? It just so happens, it's coincidental, I haven't even had a chance to call my father. Just last Shabbos, my father gave a lecture on this topic. When he was here last, he borrowed some of my philosophy books, and I don't even know what he said on the topic. Maybe he knew about this in Meshech Chachma, I'm not sure. But right now, Mamash, on our Parsha, Meshech Chachma asked this famous philosophical question, which has, again, bothered Jewish and non-Jewish philosophers as long as anyone can remember. How do you balance God's, you know, ultimate knowledge and free choice? So God, the Meshech Chachma, in a word, says that in theory it would be impossible. God, knowing everything, leaves no room for free choice. But he borrows a Kabbalistic term known as tzimtzum, which means restriction. That somehow God removes himself, whatever this means, I'm not sure I understand. God removes himself, so to speak, from the playing field to allow room for man's free choice. Again, it's a fascinating, important philosophical topic, but that part, at least, is not our topic for this evening. He then says, again, look at the second and third line, Uchein Omer Alivo, God says to himself, Nas Adam B'Tzalmeinu, let's make man in our image perish. Shatar M'Deberet L'Hashem De'Odom, God is speaking, so to speak, in our anthropomorphic language. Sh'omer Naniach Machkan L'Bechirat Adam, I will leave space for man's free choice. Sh'loya Mukhruch B'Mef'olav U'Mechuyav B'Machshav Osav, he will not have anything forcing him other than his own desires. V'Yihi B'Chirei Chavshi La'Sos Tov Ara, he can do whatever he wants, good or bad. Kasher Yachbos Nafshar, like whatever he wants. Again, here it's the point. He can even do things against his own nature, v'neged yashar bein Hashem, or things which otherwise I think would be wrong and abhorrent. The fact that man has such a powerful ability to go even against God means, in a sense, that there's no one in control of him. I.e., in that sense, he is his own God. He's the Lord of his own manner. He is Selam Elohim. We don't have the time for it, but I want to mention, just so you should see on the sheet, if you're not yet familiar, again, just recently passed away, I don't even know if he's had a yahrzeit yet, was the great Shlomo Volbe Zatzal. Great, great Musarist from formerly, not originally of Eretz Yisrael, spent time even doing graduate work in England, in psychology, and in Scotland, but that's a separate secret. But Rav Ali Shor, two volumes of great, great Musar work, he writes something beautifully here, just to point out the fact that we think about free choice, we speak about it all the time. He says free choice is something you actually have to work at. He says the nature of people is, whether it's human nature, he talks about, habit, or even, this is fascinating to me, education, right? You can be put in a school where everyone's doing something, all the rabbis are telling you something, there's groupthink. He says all of those things are working against free choice. He says here, unbelievably, he says you could spend your whole life, and never once have an individual independent thought. Unbelievable. This is the Revolvi. Rather, he says in the bottom, it's not just a thing you can assume that everyone has free choice. Rather, you have to work and make an independent choice. To think independently is not a natural thing for many, many people. You got to work at being a little different. Okay. I don't have time anymore. I'm going to ask for your indulgence. If you have to leave, of course I agree. But otherwise, I'm going to ask your indulgence to give me 5 more minutes. Two more theories. Well, one very quick one, which doesn't count. So 2.5. I mentioned it last week. What did Rav Sadia Gaon say? We saw this, Eben Ezra quoted this also. Rav Sadia Gaon says, what does that mean, B'Tzalmeinu, in the image of God? Shalit. That man will be not only the last creation created in Bereshis, but man, in theory, has the power to control and have dominion over the entire creation, over the earth, over the water, over the birds. Everything else was created. Adam is now the lord of that manner. Adam is the Shalit. And the ability to have domain and mastery is itself, in a sense, divine. That is Salam Elohim. In a somewhat different, but I think essentially similar way, is a very, very significant component of Rav Soloveitchik Zatzal's thinking. Something that he mentioned in at least 2 essays, most well known in the first, but a very, very consistent and significant part of a Soloveitchik essay, and that is the obligation for mankind to not only be creative, which is what he'll say explicitly, but the related point here, he doesn't just mean creative in the sense of thinking about a nice shot in Tosfos, he means creativity in thinking about how do we get to the moon. Creativity in how we can come up with new ways to get water. Creativity in new ways we can fight disease. Which is very similar, in a sense, to Rav Sadia Gaon's Shalit. Using mankind's intellectual abilities, etc., obviously inspired by the Rambam in that sense, but to be creative in a way to master the world. So just to read you one of the things which is so beautiful, he says, we're going to get back to this essay. The Lonely Man of Faith very famously talks about the two versions, Perek Aleph and Perek Beis, chapter 1 and chapter 2, of the creation of Adam. And in fact, when we get to that issue in the biblical criticism factor, we will turn back to this essay from Rav Soloveitchik. One of the things he says, that when he refers to the first account, he means in Perek Aleph here, that image of God, Tzelem Elohim, refers to man's inner charismatic endowment as a creative being. Man's likeness to God expresses itself in man's striving and ability to be a creator, right? Confronting the outside world and inquiring into complex workings. There's a Hebrew book of essays that was published, I believe, in his lifetime, but I think it was not necessarily things he wrote, but maybe more from public speeches he gave. There was a number of these books that were published in Hebrew, one of which was Imei Zikaron. So there he also re-mentions this idea, and he again reiterates it. The Torah describes the creation at length in order to teach us a very important lesson, to walk in all of his ways, halachta b'drachav, and to instruct man to imitate his creator and be himself a creator. What is the essence, what is the defining aspect of God in one sense, in the sense that's most being told to us in the story of Bereishis? What do I keep on referring to? This is the creation story. This is God as a creator. So if you're supposed to be in the image of God, just like God was a creator, the Baruch Shalom was creator, we are supposed to be creative, and our ability for creativity is known as the Tzal Elokim. And finally, we'll return once more to a personality who can probably rightfully be described as straddling the fence between philosopher and the Musarist, and that is Rav Eliyahu Dessler and his classical work. We have in honor of the English men and women who are in the crowd, from Gateshead originally, first famously before moving to Bnei Brak, and that is Rav Mitzvah Eliyahu of Rav Dessler's. He has a very famous essay in the first volume known as the Kuntras HaChesed. It's many, many pages, and he gives it a whole title. Very famous, all about his whole essay on kindness, on acts of Gemilas Chesed. It's very, very beautiful, very insightful. This that I have here, these three lines, are from the opening paragraph of that famous essay. Right in his, the first thing he says when he launches his essay in his discussion on Chesed, he starts off with the following. These are the opening words. Kashir bara elokimas adam. When mankind was created by God, asahu lenosein venotel, made man in the ability to be both a giver and a taker. Koch hanasina, hu koch elyon mimidas yoser hakol baruch hu. The ability to give is God's highest attribute. Not the only one. After all, Shu Marachim, he is merciful, umaytiv, and he gives, does good. But no sin, mibli kibel davar petzmura. God does all these things without giving, receiving anything in return. But kacha asa esa adam, says Rav Dessler, and that ability to give is exactly the way he made man. Kachasuv, betzalem elokim asa esa adam, ki yuchal larachim, lahaytiv, alitain. In other words, what is it? A moral compass, the ability to be a moral, caring, considerate, giving person. Says Rav Dessler, that is the quintessential characteristic of God, and therefore B'Tselem, Elokim, and we're in his image, is the quintessential characteristic of humanity. So what if we have? We saw a few theories. One said the Rashi and the Rambam is man's intellectual capabilities. That was number one. We saw the Meshech Chochma said the ability for mankind to freely choose was number two. Number three was Rav Soloveitchik and or Rav Sadia Gaon, man's ability to create and through their creativity to control and to mold the world into a better place. And number four is the idea of the Mechta Me'Eliyahu, the idea of Rachmanus, and the idea of giving, being an empathetic, giving creature, that is uniquely human characteristic.